N0TR, KN4RJM.
N0TR.
N0TR, KN4RJM. How you doing, Tom? How's the missus?
She's as good as gold. John, how you doing?
Well, I'm walking almost like a normal person. I can actually, I can get my socks on. Can't quite cut my toenails yet, but I can get my socks on. Takes a little acrobatics to do that, but I can do it, you know. So, and you know, the first step or two after I've been sitting for a while is a little bit slow, but after that I'm back up to speed. No pain to amount to anything other than, you know, occasional twinge when I twist it, but I'm doing good.
As good as new, but they say it takes about 12 weeks for that to heal properly, so they cautioned her to be careful about it, John, but all she had to take the whole time was 6 Tylenols and none of the hard stuff.
This is KN4RJM. For the first week or two, I would have been happier if I'd had a morphine drip, but after that, it was not too bad. I got off that stuff as quick as I could, because that was stopping me up like crazy. So, but yeah, Bernice, don't go running any marathons there, honey. Or playing hopscotch, or field goal to a soccer game or anything like that. But just as long as I'm walking on relatively, I can even go uphill without hurting, and that was the thing that used to get me. When I was before the surgery and then immediately after the surgery, I can actually take the dog down at the bottom of the hill and back up and keep up with him. So, I'd rate mine at about 90%. And as I recall on the last time, it was close to six months where I was, it was completely, totally, I didn't notice it was there.
Farm stock there, John. This is N0TR.
KN4RJM. Hi, Bernice. I'm glad to see you're doing better than I was doing at that point in time. But it'll after we're both completely healed up, we'll go dancing if you want to.
It varies from patient to patient, but he said women tend to tolerate it better. I hate to say that over the air.
This is KN4RJM. I actually read an article in Science News here several weeks back. It comes out every other week, so it could have been 4 or 5 issues back, so it's been a while. But talking about the difference in pain in males and females, and that there's actually a physiological difference in how they experience pain and pain thresholds. It's a pretty interesting article. I'm going to have to go look that up again.
Down there eating a piece of custard pie she made, and oh boy, it's as far uptown as you can get, John. Well, my younger daughter, who's the exact opposite of her mother and more like her dad, in her great wisdom, told me, men don't have babies is the reason.
This is KN4RJN. Well, according to the article, what I remember of it, and it's been a while since I read it, the brain is wired different in a female than it is in a male, which, I can't argue with that at all. But the body is wired different, too. And it's just, a difference in what we perceive as pain and how much we perceive it as pain. And it's the difference between the male and the female.
The guys asked me what's the secret to a long marriage. I will be 58 years next month, and I always tell them, John, slap them around once a week, whether they need it or not. Then I pause, and then I tell them they can borrow my ruse and mascara to cover up their bruises. Well, those neurons are probably different in them. I don't know, but the doctor did acknowledge that women seem to tolerate the surgery better than men. Well, I got a shunt in me right now from my left kidney down to my bladder, so next month I gotta go. They're gonna go in through my back because it's too big to take out the other way. It's an inch and a quarter in diameter is one of them, and then he said there was a whole lot more in there than that. And I said, good, you gonna take that shunt out? He says, oh yeah, but I'm gonna put a bigger one in. And that one they take out while you're awake, and I'm not looking forward to that, but I am looking forward to get them kidney stones out of there. And he said not too long ago, when I had a MRI, and he says, you didn't have any stones in there. So he said, I don't know what's caused them all of a sudden, and I don't either, John. I've never had one.
Let's see who this came for. Well, I've never either, and I'm knocking on wood right now. Because from people I know that have had them, I do not, you know, want to experience that at all. Yeah. So, 50, how many years?
Well, we've been married 58 years on March the 15th. And best thing I ever done, John. And she's the greatest thing I ever done. And I wouldn't want anything any different, I can tell you that. But she actually, you fixed up her that night, didn't you, Mom? After the surgery.
This is Dan for Jan. Yeah, Karen and I have been, well, it'll be 49 years end of this month. Next year is our 50th. I think we're going to take a trip. We're thinking about going to Ireland. My my daughter and her husband will have been married 25 years, and his parents are also married 50 years in 2025. So we're going to all pack up and go to. We thought about going to Spain, and then we thought about going to Ireland. I looked at Spain in the summertime, and I don't want to get anywhere near that. But I think we're going to go to Ireland, and I'm going to find me a little pub somewhere, and a bar stool, and a dartboard, and sit there and drink and play guards and roam the countryside. That's why I wanted to get this hip taken care of, so that I could actually walk and keep up with everybody else.
John, our older daughter and son-in-law, they loved it over in Spain. Have they been there twice, Bernice? Yeah, I think so. And then they've been to Madeira Island. They really like that. I like the runway going into there. It's amazing. I don't know if I'd want to land on it. It looks like a carrier deck. But then I think that's the island that looked that way. I got a picture of it upstairs. But Amy went to Scotland year before last with her family, and they really enjoyed that. I didn't think the boys would, but they did. One of them was 13 at the time. The other one was about 16. But Ireland, the older kids have been to Ireland. I think they went over there when they was... My son-in-law had a job in Germany, in Frankfurt, and Shelley was going to university, studying music while he was working, and they went over to Ireland on St. Patrick's Day and played golf over there.
This is Kane Ford, and yeah, we went to Spain once. We went to the Costa Brava when we were stationed in Germany. We took a vacation shot over there. And towards the end of the season, it was still, you know, fairly warm. And we had a good time, but I was looking at going in 26 to see the eclipse, which passes through Spain. And then we got to looking at when it is, and I started checking temperatures in the areas where we would need to go to see it. And it's triple digit most of the time. So, well, you know, I've seen two eclipses. That's, you know, that's enough. You know, we could go to Ireland to see, you know, a partial eclipse, about 90-something percent. Or we could just go and not worry about it, and I'll take a small travel scope, and we can just look at stars, get out close to the coast, and get away from the city lights and have some fairly dark skies. So I think we'll do that. But in any event, yeah. Spain was, you know, this was, I guess, September-ish, you know, towards the end of the summer, and it was starting to cool off in Germany, but Spain was still pretty warm. And of course, Costa Brava is down south Spain, so we speak with a draw down there. But yeah, I think that's where we're gonna go. I think we're gonna go to Ireland. We're planning the trip and getting my son-in-law is doing all the research on where we're gonna go and how much it's gonna cost and all that kind of stuff. So we're gonna drag everybody over there, I think.
This is in 0TR. Well, that sounds like a nice trip. We don't travel much anymore, John. Our daughter that lives here, that works for GE, and my son-in-law, and the boys, Isaac's 18, and Jordan's 15 now, or 16, right? Jordan's 16, isn't he? They went to, what was the name of that town down there? No, they went to Seneschal, Georgia, to university there. And then they went on down to, what was that name of that town in Florida? It was in the Florida Panhandle. They ought to be pulling into town anytime. They went down there and spent a couple of days on the beach. And the oldest daughter and her husband took out Monday for San Antonio. And it looks like that polar vortex is even going to slightly reach down there. But it'd be warm compared to what Michigan's going to be over.
This is KN4RJ. And yeah, we're going to get some cold weather here, too. And of course, you guys are down there, too. But yeah, I've been to Michigan in the summertime, and it was still cold, so I feel like my blood's thinned out too much being down here in the South for as long as I have. But I feel for those people up there. I don't know how they stand it. I really don't. But but then again, they think we're crazy down here in the summertime. So I guess all depends on what you're used to.
We lived in Kansas for 62 years. We saw times when it'd go a week or two, once, that was zero or below. And that's going to hit again this week. It's going to be zero and below zero for several days in Kansas City and clear down to southeast Kansas. And I haven't looked tonight. I watch it up there because I still got friends up there. We do. And they're supposed to get 5 to 8 inches of snow, and then it's going to turn cold. I don't think we're going to get much out of this Wednesday, but you never know, because it's the timing of that warm front when it hits the cold front, they say, and they're headed at each other, and it could be just an all-rain event, hopefully. We don't need ice.
This is a stand for our jam. Yeah, our weather lady is saying that collision between the warm front and the cold front is going to happen right about over our heads. So, and depending on whether, you know, 5-10 mile difference in the track depends on whether we get rain, snow, a mixture, sleet. You know, they're saying it's possible 2 to 5 inches up here, which, after having been stationed in Maine, is I consider a dusting, but down here they that's a major snow event.
Up in Maine. I can remember the name of that Air Force base if I heard it, but I can't think of it off the top of my head.
This is KN4RJ. I was at Brunswick Naval Air Station with the Army Recruiting Battalion stationed on a Navy base. Yeah, there's an Air Force base up there, and I can't think of what the name of it is either. I've never been there. But yeah, up there they didn't call school unless you could measure the snow in meters. I had an old J10 pickup truck with a plow on the front of it that I bought from a Navy guy. And we lived on a cul-de-sac. And of course, base engineers come around, plow the street, but they'd leave a, half a meter tall pile of snow at the end of your driveway. So I always parked it facing out so I could punch out my driveway and then go punch out everybody else's driveway and then go to work and plow the parking lot. So that was the XO's job, was to plow the parking lot.
They had plenty of snow up there. I just can't pull that name up out of my head up there. The only one I can think of is where Bush lives in Kennebunkport. And I don't think there's an Air Force base right there. But, our next deployment was going to be to ADAC, Alaska, before that. But I wasn't looking forward to that. That's out at the end of the Aleutian Islands, and they said the winds could be up over 100 miles an hour out there. They said when they landed, everybody had to get up out of their seats and run to the front of the aircraft because it was a tricycle gear, and it kind of went nose down when you landed, and it would flip it back on the mat gear on the tail, and they didn't want that to happen, so they needed all the weight towards the front. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's what the guy said that had been there.
This is KN4RJ, and well, if everybody's got to run to the front of the plane when it lands, that sounds like a design flaw to me, but that's, what do I know? But, that would be unhandy for your plane to fall back on its tail.
In Canada, it was a Delta flight today, and it totally inverted, John. It's, I think I heard 8 people on 1 child. It's very critical. And the vertical stabilizer was gone, and the horizontal stabilizer was gone. The cockpit was intact, and the whole aircraft fuselage was intact, but it was inverted, laying on its back.
This is KN4RJN. Yeah, I saw that on the news. It lost a wing, so apparently it dipped. They said it was coming in a pretty heavy crosswind. I'll continue on that investigation until they figure it out. They theorize he dipped that wing and it hit something on the ground and just tore it off and flipped it. So, But as they say, any landing you can walk away from is a good one.
And they trapped the wing there kind of sideways as they come in and, I forget what they call that, a skew or something like that. And then the wind will straighten you out with the rudder after you land. But he probably skidded in. They just kind of turn sideways as they're coming in before they touch clear down. And then they straighten it out right as they touch down. So maybe he didn't time it right. Jet engines don't spool up instantly like the old turboprops, these fan jets. There's a delay by the time you throttle them up and by the time it takes effect. Unless things have changed, that's always what I was told. Now, the turboprops, we didn't experience that kind of a problem. They were 4,600 horsepower apiece.
This is KN4RJN. Yeah, I don't know, but I know that plane looks... The fact that he got it on the ground and everybody survived, tells me he did, I don't know what, maybe it might have been a guess that caught him or something, but he got it on the ground and everybody lived, so my hat's off to him.
45 miles an hour, crosswinds, the max the big ones can take, but I wouldn't want to land in that big of a crosswind, but... those planes are awful big. The Navy plane, the carrier plane wasn't that heavy that I flew in, but the patrol plane was 140,000 gross. It carried 9,200 gallons of jet fuel. But, of course, when you're getting back and you're light and have burned off fuel, you're not that heavy, but... they take some pretty good crosswinds. it's still the safest transportation in the world. Heck, I've seen days when there were 8,000 flights in the air, John, at the same time over the United States.
This is KM4RG. Yeah, Tom, I saw a buddy of mine pop up on Echo Link. Give me just a second here. KA4PQA, this is KM4RJN. Steven, how you doing there, buddy?
John, if you can hear me okay, I hooked up a new Bluetooth speaker, portable Bluetooth speaker yesterday, and I've spent a good part of the day it's the first time my wife and I have ever had one, and it's been I've spent several hours just getting the audio settings right. So John, outside of that, John, we're doing good, and just stay warm and stay dry down here.
This is Kane for our channel. Steven, you're coming in loud and clear there, brother. So apparently it's working. Yeah, staying warm and staying dry is going to be the order of the day for the next several days. It's supposed to get cold as I don't know what all, and we're going to get some kind of potential, going to be rain or snow or both or a mixture or whatever. But you give my best to your messes and you stay warm, stay dry there, brother.
Affirmative, John. She's sitting right here beside me in the same room. I had it on my earpiece, but I've got it back on the new speaker now, John. If you'd like to come back in there and say hello to her.
This is Kane for RJN. Well, hello there, darling. How are you doing?
My wife heard you okay through the new speaker, John. She has been having some good days as far as her headaches goes, John. She has been having more better days here lately, so that's a good thing. But yeah, she heard you on the new speaker say hello to her. But yeah, she's been having a lot more good days with her headaches.
This is KN4RJ. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I know you guys are having some issues with that there for a while, but I'm glad she's having better days. I hope she continues to have more. Steven, you take care, and like I said, stay warm, stay dry, take care of her, and have a good evening there, brother.
Copy that, John. She heard what you said, and she does appreciate the well wishes. But John, I wanted to, I'm gonna try to check into the net tonight. But if we do, if I am able to, John, me and you've already spoken. So John, it was good to talk to you again, and have a good rest of the night over that way, and we'll talk with you sometime later on. KA4PQA.
This is KN4RGN. Roger that, Stephen. You have a good one. Tom, you still there?
Yes, sir. John, this is N0TR, KN4RGN. And good evening to you, Stephen, and talk to you down the line. John, I was just sitting there. That's just fine. We just was watching an old Gunsmoke movie. Bernice is reading one of her magazines, and I just finished up my custard pie. And I was looking at that plane. It was in Toronto, and there was snow, but I'm sure the runways were probably clear.
It is being 4RJ, and yeah, there's always snow in Toronto. I mean, when I lived in Maine, they said, when we first got there, they said the weather in Maine is, you know, you got 9 months of snow and 3 months of bad sledding. And they weren't kidding. when the snow finally disappears, then you got 3 months of mud, and then, and I think the main state bird in the summertime is the mosquito, and they grow them big up there. But I saw guys with ball caps that had a big mosquito on it and said main state bird on it. And I was like, but mosquitoes like stagnant water, and the black flies like running water, so you can't get away from them.
Excuse me, they had them up there, and we watched Life Below Zero, and there's another one about Port something or other up there. We like it, and Homestead Rescue, we like that one. And I've never seen so dang many mosquitoes as there are up there in Alaska. And the daughter says they're pretty bad up there in Michigan. They live just southwest of Detroit and West Bloomfield. But Hal, my son-in-law, was an engineer all his life, and most of it he spent working for a company that did the foam in your seats. And he worked his way up from engineer out in the shop and field service. And he's been corporate for the last quite a few years here now. I imagine the last 5 or 10 years. But he used to have to drive to Toronto. And we used to watch a show on TV about the wreckers that went out on that one highway up there going into Toronto. I can't remember which one it was, a 495 or something. And oh, my God, it's a mess. They had these huge wreckers that went out and pulled these semis and went off the road up there. There was times when he'd have to drive back and forth up there just doing his work, you know. And I didn't envy him, but he just retired just a couple of months ago, and he's really enjoying it, deer hunting. Put in for an elk permit, but he hasn't got one the last couple of years. Or a mule deer. But he likes to go hunting up in Wyoming and that with his buddies. But he still deer hunts in Michigan and Wisconsin. So he's enjoying his retirement. They're the ones that went to San Antonio. And my daughter, she teaches school for 2 more years up there in West Bloomfield. And then she can retire, and she's looking forward to that. And then they're going to retire over to his mother's farm in Wisconsin. You know, if you think the temperatures are bad in Michigan, over there in Wisconsin where she's at near Madison in Verona, I don't know, they're like 15, 18 degrees below zero here this week.
This is a can for her, Jan. Yeah, they can keep all of that up there. I have noticed that as I get older, I get colder, and my wife doesn't. So I come up here to my office. I got a little electric fireplace that I keep it about 85 in here, which is the only way I can survive. It's like when the temperature starts going up in the summertime, you know, I'll sit out on the back deck and bake in the sun. And have a friend of ours that has spent several different summers down in Cozumel, Mexico, and she took us down there 1 year, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the heck out of it. I thought it was too hot and too humid. And my friend wants to go back to Cozumel sometime this spring. And and Karen said, well, okay, but she does not like the heat, and I do not like the cold, so what can I say?
are. Yeah, I was looking at this plane again. I like you. I like it warm. We keep it 72, 73 degrees here. Makes the electric bill go up, but that's tough. We like it warm. And the basement's warm, too. Air traffic control sounds from the incident indicated that winds at the airport were roughly 20 to 30, with gusts near 40. And that's about all I read about it. But they can take up to that, I know. Our nephew flies 787s now. But he said, you're talking about going over to Ireland. I said, what happens if an engine conks out halfway across? I said, that's 3,000 miles across there. And at that time, he was flying 777s, which is a big one. And he says, Tom, he says, I have on one engine 211 minutes to find a place to land on one engine. And, you know, it puts a lot of strain on that one engine if you lose it out there and you got a full load of fuel and all. But 211 minutes, I don't think you got much to worry about, John.
This is KFRG, and that's, well, depending on where where it conks out at, that could be enough to get you to land. But if you just left, and of course, if you just left, you could turn around and come back. But you know, if you're right smack dab in the middle, I don't know that you could get there in 211 minutes. Get either way, or get to something solid to land on. You can certainly send out all kinds of distress calls in 211 minutes, so they know where to look.
Newfoundland, Greenland, you got Iceland, and there's some other various islands out there that you can abort to. But that's what the co-pilot is doing, is he's sitting there the whole trip figuring out, you know, if something happens, where are we going to land, and what heading are we going to take, and what speed are we going to take. So I just don't have any fears of it whatsoever. And you know, Steve's been flying now since 1991. He flew C-130s in Iraq, and he's been flying with American Airlines since then. And he flies international flights now that are, over 13 hours, I know, down to Indonesia and South Korea and Hong Kong and all over the South Pacific. And the amazing thing is they leave from Dallas and fly nonstop, John.
This is KN4RG. Well, I'm reminded of a joke by Ron White. He was on an airplane and going, I don't know where, and the pilots announced that one of the engines had failed. And the woman sitting next to him said, how far do you think we can get on one engine? And he says, all the way to the scene of the crash. Figure we'll beat the paramedics by about 30 minutes.
Well, I'll tell you this. We had the carrier plane I was on was an S2 Grumman. And we were out in a normal operating area off San Diego, out near Catalina and San Clemente. And I hadn't been informed just exactly what we was going to do. But it was a test flight for the pilot and co-pilot. So I think it was about 5,000 feet. I think that was the minimum. And I heard the one engine next to me. We had a porthole on each side, but all I could see, unless I looked down, was the engine cowling. And they were reciprocating engines. And I know from going through electrical and instrument school that whenever you would, let me hit this button, whenever you would lose an engine, you'd go to rudder assist, and it'd kick up your rudder pressure from 1,500 to 3,000 pounds. And Captain Beck was up front, and I could reach up there and touch the pilot or the co-pilot just about. And he said, "Hey, Rouse, look up here." And I said, "Why is that engine roaring so much?" He said, "Look out your window and, or portal." And I looked out, and of course, one engine had stopped and was feathered. And he says, "Look, Rouse, no hands." And all he had was his feet on the rudder, and he held his hands up and was waving at me from up front. I told him, "You get your hands back on that yoke." He was a real card, I'll tell you. But they would practice one engine out, actually not in the trainer, but actually out over the water, John.
This is K4RG. Yeah, well, I flew with a few helicopter pilots that were about half that crazy too, but we were coming back from Stuttgart, heading back to Würzburg in a OH-58, and I was dozing off, and a couple of German fighter jets. No, they weren't German. I think they were ours. But in any event, a couple of fighter jets decided they wanted to, they apparently liked to mess with helicopters. And one, they split, and one went over and one went under us. And the one that went in front of us and one behind us, excuse me. And I swear that guy's wingtip was between the rotor disc and the canopy. He was so close. And scared the bejesus out of the pilot, woke me up, and scared me. He says, "Sir, if you don't mind, I'd like to lose a little altitude." I said, "You put these kids in the dirt, buddy." We flew back. We got back. There were grass stains on the bottom of the skids. We got out of the sky in a hurry. And I thought, you guys, I had a few choice words for those pilots, but in any event, scared the bejesus out of us.
Captain Beck was, he was Lieutenant Beck, actually, but he was a captain of our aircraft. He was a Mustanger and had worked his way up to the limited duty officers, I think it was, that he got up to that. But boy, he was a fine pilot. But, yeah, it gets a little dicey. We would fly formation now and then, and it was really cool. I didn't know if you could carry a camera or not at that time, and so I never did. I figured I'd get in trouble with it. But you could look out there and see those other planes flying next to you. Now, they don't fly as close as the Blue Angels or nothing, but it's really fascinating. But I trusted him with my life. He was just fantastic. That's all I can ever... They had the best pilots in the world. You land on one of them aircraft carriers, you got to know what you're doing.
This is KN4RJN. Yeah, I've heard pilots describe that as landing on a postage stamp, and it's moving. It's like bopping and weaving in the waves. Land on one of those things, you got to know what you're doing.
Yeah, my nephew, he was bragging about the Air Force one day, and I asked him if he ever made an arrested landing on a carrier. He said, "No, you got to be crazy." We called them control crashes, but they were interesting, to say the least. But some of the antics that they pulled were amazing. But we flew real low, 100 foot in the daytime was a minimum, 300 feet at night. And I'll tell you, that's real close when you're bobbing and weaving in a clover leaf pattern over sonobuoys and that. But it was very interesting. But we had you're talking about one messing with the other. We had an A4 Skyhawk turn his fire control radar on one day, and I was in seat number 3 with my electronic countermeasure screen in front of me. And I'll tell you, when you hear that, it makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up as much as flying over a Russian destroyer or something, and they lock onto you with a fire control because you hear the pulse repetition frequency. It's very high. the pulse width's very short. It's nothing like a search radar, so you know when you're going to be targeted. And those guys, you're right, they like to play games at times. Well, John, I better let you go. It's getting up towards net time. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad you're getting along well. Bernice is doing fantastic. I'm not looking forward to the cold weather coming. I think after I get this kidney surgery done, I'm just about due for shoulder surgery again. You get our age, pills and bills. Anyways, take care, John. KN4RG and N0TR. Good to hear from you. I'm clear.
N0TRKN4RJN. You have a good evening. Bernice, you too. This is KN4RJN, and I am clear.
N0TR, KK4JD.
Works. And is it JB or JV? This is N0TR. The name's Tom.
Tom, yeah, it's KK4JD. Delta. Just real quick, I bought a MFJ antenna tuner from you maybe a year or two ago, and I remember you had two, and I was just curious if you still had the other one.
I kind of keep it as a spare. I don't really need to, Joe, if I got that name right. Is that working all right for you? It was always a good tuner.
Great tuner. I've got a couple of old boat anchors that I was able to fix up, and I was thinking about using a separate tuner for one or two of those.
You want to hang on to it? I got this Palstar now, HF Auto Tuner, and it's got a big inductor and a big capacitor in it and stepper motors that tune, and it's just been fantastic. That's not near as fast as, generally, as the MFJ one. But I don't know if you can even buy those MFJ ones anymore. It means they went out of business.
Sad news recently. That's too bad. I bought a lot of their stuff over the years. I was kind of sorry to hear about that.
Everybody was, Joe. It was a shame, but you know, that gentleman that owned it was really upstanding fella and run it for many, many years, and I think he just tired out and wanted to retire. And after, I think COVID is what finally killed him over there, you know. But they always, that was always good to me. I had both of those I had just sent to the factory, and I didn't need two of them, that's for sure. And I wouldn't even know what to ask for this when Joe hadn't given it a thought.
I was just kind of curious. Yeah, I could think about it and let me know someday. I certainly would be interested.
Joe, I got your name and address here on QRZ, so I'll keep that in mind and I'll write it down. And thanks for inquiring. It's over here sitting in a box in a temperature controlled area here in the basement at about 72 degrees, so I'm sure it's ready to go. And it just also come back from the factory, and I never did plug it in the circuit since it come back. Well, I did too. I think I tested both of them, but they work. They're great. No problem. I'll think it over and talk with the wife about it, and like I said, I don't even know if they're for sale anymore or not, but thanks for hollering at me. KK4, Juliet Delta, N0TR, 73.
73, KK4, JD, clear.